A new female boss for the World Trade Organization. From London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Vishala Sripathma in for Victoria Craig. Good morning. A woman will lead the World Trade Organization for the first time in its history. The agency is in the process of recruiting a new director general. Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala of Nigeria and Yoo Young-hee of South Korea have made it to the final round. The BBC's Andrew Walker has been following developments.
The WTO member countries are trying to choose a new director general by consensus. If they're able to coalesce around one of the two remaining candidates, it would be the first time that the top job in the agency has been held by a woman. Whoever ultimately takes the post, and a decision is expected by early next month, they will face major challenges. Two of the biggest commercial powers, the United States and China, are embroiled in a bitter trade conflict. The US, especially under President Trump's administration, has a range of complaints about how the organization works and has made it much more difficult for the WTO to perform one of its key functions, settling disputes between members. In London, I'm the BBC's Andrew Walker for Marketplace.
People arriving in the United Kingdom from abroad may soon be able to cut the time they have to self-isolate. Plans considered by the government will look at introducing COVID-19 testing systems for travellers. Over 30 countries have already introduced testing at airports to lessen the risk of transmission and reduce quarantine periods. Peter Morris is the chief economist at the investment consultancy Ascend by Cirium. I asked him if this is a step in the right direction for air travel.
Look at somewhere like Heathrow, where maybe one third of the passengers are connecting to go on somewhere else. You've then got the jurisdiction and the regulations to do with those onward destinations. So doing things unilaterally is going to be a problem. You have to do it at the very minimum at a regional level to actually cover enough of the traffic.
Do you think it's logical that testing could reduce quarantine time? You won't have to quarantine as much, and that will hopefully boost travel.
Quarantine is a very blunt weapon. If you had some consistent measurement process that was taking place at airports, I think it would give a glimmer of hope, because at the moment, the threat of quarantine is enough to kill a country's tourism industry.
Do you think there are other steps that can be taken to increase consumer confidence to support the recovery of international travel?
I know we're talking about everything being doom and gloom, and it's certainly looking very black at the moment. But at one end of the spectrum, we can see China, for example, that has had a very limited number of cases. I think for the past 28 days, might even be no cases in a country of a billion people. So you have seen the air transport industry rebuilding domestically in China. And the level of flights is now up to 80-90% of what it was in 2019. And the number of passengers is about 75-80% or so on the domestic front. On the international front, it's another story entirely because of the quarantines coming into China and also of countries that insist on quarantine. So some kind of testing protocol has to be a step forward.
Peter Morris, Chief Economist at Ascend by Cirium. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Let's do the markets here in Europe. Stocks are trading higher this morning, with global investors keeping an eye on stimulus discussions in the United States. Across the world, as many schools closed to control the spread of COVID-19, classes moved online. But millions of children don't have access to the equipment they need to benefit from virtual learning. As the BBC's Su Ping Chan reports, there are some novel solutions when it comes to tackling this digital divide.
From America to Kenya, teachers, politicians and even economists are trying to figure out the best way to ensure kids keep learning. The World Bank believes that between 7 and 10 million children may never go back.
We're facing the most serious crisis on education of the last 100 years at least.
That's Jaime Saavedra, the World Bank's Global Director for Education.
You have extended school closures. Public education budgets will be under pressure. Family budgets will be under pressure.
Keeping kids engaged is key. But how do you do that when jumping online isn't an option? Luckily, Mexico already has a blueprint for teaching kids remotely. Telesecundaria was set up all the way back in 1968 to ensure young teenagers living in remote areas had access to education via their television.
They are seen often as low-quality schools because you just see the students in front of the TV.
Laia Navarro Sola is an assistant professor at Stockholm University in Sweden.
That's not entirely true, though, because the daily classes are a combination of the remote instruction, and then students have some time to work on exercises, talk to their peers. So it's a blended environment.
Mexico is not the only country that has experience of teaching kids remotely. Back in 2014, schools in the West African country of Liberia closed for almost a year in an attempt to control the spread of the Ebola virus. Liberia took classes to the airwaves. Let us go to school. Lisa Hartenberger-Toby at the Education Development Center helped to roll out the program.
And we were working with a population that could never afford internet or even television, but probably could afford a radio. I think there's so many lessons that other countries could learn from Liberia.
Learning under lockdown hasn't been easy, but both Mexico and Liberia have shown that you don't always need a laptop to get ahead. I'm the BBC's Suping Chan for Marketplace.
And in London, I'm Vishala Sripathma with a Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.